5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
In the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson. I got
that sunshine. Welcome back. And we've got some meaty sports topics to get into, but I've got first a question for the gloss, who has savvy fashion sense and knows everything about the Raiders. Mark Davis this week was in the news, and there were a couple of things that came out of it. He was in the news because he was in a very, very minor car accident. Everyone was fine. But as part of this accident, we got to see what Mark Davis drives. We saw his ride, if you will. And it's not very impressive.
It's not a Ferrari.
He's the owner of the Raiders, and he lives in Vegas. You might think he'd have something really cool and slick like a Ferrari, but no. Mark Davis, the man with the beautiful haircut, drives a Mini Cooper. A Mini Cooper. Carla, how do you explain this? And you couple that with his hair. There's a picture of him standing around in the parking lot post-accident next to his Mini Cooper, sporting his hairstyle. This guy, for a man who owns a team in Vegas, of all things.
And is worth $500 million?
I think he needs to step up his game, live life a little better.
Well, I think he needs what parking lot that he was in. I think that's interesting.
Oh, he was in the parking lot of TJ Maxx, was he not? I mean, he needs to live a little larger.
No,
come on.
You know what? As a Cradle Raiders fan in Princess of Darkness,
yes.
I'm all about it. I think it's awesome.
Really?
Because he's very, obviously very eccentric. And, you know, I love seeing a man that's worth $500 million that acts like he's worth $50. I mean, seriously. And this is a pattern of Mark Davis. This isn't just he got in the spotlight and now he's doing this. I mean,
he's the Warren Buffett of the NFL.
He is. He drives to Palm Desert for that haircut, which he loves people talking about his hair. He has had basically three barbers since he left college, since he left Chico State.
He's loyal.
He's very, very loyal. And he's, you know, when the Raiders were in Oakland, his office, quote, air quotes, was in P.F. Chang's near his house in the East Bay. He sat at the bar with his 2003 Nokia push phone. He drove a 1997 Dodge Caravan that had like a VHS connected to the roof. And he flies Southwest. Never got on his dad's charter plane when Al Davis was the owner. He flew Southwest to wherever the guys were going. I love it. I think it sends a great message.
Unparalleled insights on Mark Davis.
Love me some Mark Davis.
You've heard
Davis.
Him here. We'll come back to the NBA. We're going to look at the losers and their offseason when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the boss.
And the gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Well, Carla, I was going to label this segment the losers segment because we're going to look at teams that lost in the conference or in the playoffs. Yes. And then we were going to look at the lottery teams, which were losers, but some of them are winners. I mean, the Pistons landing the number one overall pick, the ping pong balls going their way. But let's talk about a big-time losing team, the Nets.
Whew.
So heralded. They have their big three, an unprecedented offensive juggernaut assembly of three. And they struggle down the stretch. Injuries, of course, Kyrie turning his ankle, Harden hampered by the hamstring.
KD playing out of his mind.
Yeah, KD playing out of his mind. And, of course, Charles Barkley, it's sort of interesting, coming into that whole series, was saying explicitly, no, I'm rooting against the Nets. I don't like these manufactured teams. I don't like these assembled superstar teams.
I agree with him.
He was rooting against them. There was almost a sense that karma had struck, and this way they were being penalized through injuries. Where do the Nets go from here? What's your take on the Nets right now?
You know, this is going to be bold. I think they've got to trade Kyrie.
I really do.
I mean, I thought
the big three.
Well, you look at, honestly, yes, I do think you have to break up the big three. Do I think they're going to do that? I think GM Sean Marks in Brooklyn is very tight to the vest, and as he should be. But I think he should explore what can happen there. Because you look, if I look at the whole, you know, Kyrie is expensive. Kyrie is one of the best, if not the best, ISO player in the NBA. The guy is supremely talented. What I am doubting about Kyrie is his dedication to the game and his craft and his profession, honestly. Because look, is this what you want? If I'm GM Sean Marks, is this what I want for my team? You start the season, first press conference, you refuse to talk to the media. That's your first look. Then you take this unspecified personal leave during the season.
Yeah, Kyrie did. He just checked out.
Just checked out. And it was around the George Floyd thing. I do understand all of that and Black Lives Matter. But you know what? That affects a lot of people in the NBA and it affects a lot of people across the country, period. And if everyone just took off from their jobs, how is that helpful for the cause for Black Lives Matter? That's a whole nother thing. Then during his pseudo paternity leave, he hosts this maskless party during COVID.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think ends up being like an extended COVID leave without us even knowing. Then he's unavailable during the playoffs due to some ankle injury, which is just one of the many injuries he's dealt with all season long. Is his talent really worth the headache? He wasn't there for the Nets. Hmm.
Yeah. His history in Boston, too, very checkered. Of course, Danny Ainge was so excited to trade for him and got a sweet deal for him. I think with Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving coming back to the Celtics.
Yeah, got a lot.
And that assembled in Boston what would have been a great team, but Kyrie was not a great teammate, talked his way out of town, went over to the Nets, and was part of this assembly.
And has not been a great teammate here either.
Well,
Let's be clear.
And look, and James Harden is not without his blemishes.
I mean, don't even get me started there.
What happened in Houston was an ugly ending for him here, and then he went off to the Nets. He was unable to play down the stretch. He's never been a postseason performer at a high level. This year, injuries were a different beast. I mean, some of those years with the Rockets, there was one game where it just looked like he didn't care or try. This year, injuries, I'm sympathetic to that. But the Nets are a real mystery, what they do to put the pieces together for next year. Maybe they just put them all back together and hope for better health and a deeper playoff run next year. But I do think it's open question whether they can keep or should keep all of those big three.
I really think you're right because, you know, the other thing I didn't mention about Kyrie, and this is why I think thinking about what you can get in return for him. Do you remember when the Nets hired Steve Nash? They announced him as the coach. Kyrie was asked, how do you feel about that? He says, I don't need a coach.
Right.
I mean, we're like, basically, we're so good, I don't need a coach.
Yep.
Well, you know what, Kyrie? That is probably true for Kyrie Irving, KD, and James Harden. But there are like another 12 guys on the roster. And to me, that just spoke, you are an individual. That's all you care about. And, you know, he says, my basketball is kind of secondary to the platform I want to use for Black Lives Matter. And while I think that is so important, the reason he has a platform is because of basketball. So, and you know, James Harden, that's a whole new thing. Here in Houston, he started the season as the circus show, he showed up as a fat man to get himself out of Houston. and it worked. He
right.
got out of Houston. But you know what? Karma is a bee. And this is what I would say to James Harden. You're 31 years old, buddy. If you like bulk up to get out of Houston and it worked for you, and then you're going to go to the Nets and slim down in a few weeks and just play your best basketball, guess what a 31-year-old body isn't? A rubber band. And so this hamstring situation to me is an absolute consequence of fatting your way out of H-Town, getting yourself to Brooklyn, thinking you're all that in a bag of chips, and you did have a fabulous regular season. But you know what? It's going to catch up to you because you're 31 years old and you can't mess around like that. And sure enough, it did. And not only did his hamstring cost him well, really cost the Nets probably a deeper run in the playoffs, if not going all the way.
Sure.
He now has to withdraw from the Olympic team. He cannot go to Tokyo.
Yep.
So I say, you know what, James? That's what happens when you mess with Texas.
Fair enough. You heard it from the gloss. Now, KD, Kevin Durant.
Oh.
I thought he elevated his
status.
Let's
give him the love.
He really laid it out. It's a one-man band there for the Nets. But Scottie Pippen this week was really tough on Kevin Durant. It really surprised me because the conventional wisdom, the narrative, was Kevin Durant deserves a lot of love and credit for his play. Scottie Pippen came out and said, no, Durant shot the ball too much. He didn't set up his teammates. He tried to do it all by himself. And for that reason, Kevin Durant is not in the same league with LeBron James.
Disagree. I do disagree. Yeah. Because LeBron James LeBron James couldn't get his teammates. He was trying to take over that series. The Lakers have been home since the first series in the playoffs.
Yep.
KD, to me, he elevated himself to a place I've never even seen before. When you think of the injuries that he has come back from, including that Achilles, he put everything out on that floor. And if you look, Scottie Pippen, he was, especially with those last shots in the waning seconds of Game 7, he was looking for his open guys. They were not open. So why not, when you're a guy that has played 48 minutes, 53 minutes in the last two games, you're scoring 49, 48 points, you're defending, you're doing everything. Yes, that's whose hands the ball should be in. He put everything out on the floor. He was gracious in defeat, I have to say. He really acknowledged, you know, the Bucks in this, and he had his toe on the line in those waning seconds, and he was asked, Do you regret that? Do you wish you could have that over? And you know what he said? My feet are big. It was a two. And it wasn't in God's plan.
Right.
But I'm not disappointed. I gave everything I had. And you know what? For KD to be that confident, he did. And I think Scottie Pippen, he's not right on that. I think that, you know, if he watched closer, he did try and involve his teammates. His teammates weren't open and available to be involved.
It was
that
level. It was a strange grumble from a former player. It's almost like Scottie was back in his home, bitter that the attention isn't on him anymore. I don't really know why he felt the need to lash out at one of the NBA's greats who just completed one of the NBA's great games. It was a very, very strange thing. I mean, the only thing you can say wrong about Kevin Durant, when you look at his physical makeup and style and play, is that his feet are too big. But other than that, he was perfect. So give him some credit.
He was perfect. Give him some credit and being so very gracious in a very tough defeat.
All right, the lottery happened this week. The ping pong balls have settled. The Pistons get the number one overall pick. Great for Detroit. I mean, they were only a 14% chance to get the number one overall pick.
I know.
And they did.
It's the first time they've had the number one overall since 1970 when they took Bob Lanier.
The great Bob Lanier, a center. He was a great big man. Loved him. But Cade Cunningham projected to be number one. It's really interesting. While it's the conventional wisdom that he's sure to go number one overall,
he's not the best fit for Detroit.
It's not a sure thing. There's some other good opportunities there. I think Suggs may make a chance at this. It will be really interesting to see how they look at this pick. Cunningham is a top talent, but as you think about the lottery today, it's filled with 19-year-olds, and so it's just much harder to project where these guys are going to go. I mean, you think about, we were talking about Ben Simmons last hour, a number one overall pick, a wildly talented consensus number one overall pick. But when you draft guys that early, you just don't know what their work ethic
will ultimately. You don't have a body of work to look at.
You don't know if they're going to develop a shot. I mean, that might have been clear if Simmons had had 4 years of college. So when you're drafting 19
years.
Yeah, there's a higher variability in what will take place. But at the moment, Cunningham projected to go number one. The Rockets here in Houston, they got the number two pick. Great, great day for them. They had a league worst record of 17 wins.
After making the playoffs for the last 8 years.
Yeah, well, look.
Wow.
The departure of Westbrook and Harden, that team is a very different team. They're in full rebuild mode. Some think John Wall will be traded, and they've got Woods, and he's an interesting piece around which you can build.
Absolutely.
But the number two pick for Houston, that's a great opportunity for them.
I mean, a league-worst record, 17-55.
Yeah. Tough season.
Wow, that's a hard one to swallow.
Cleveland number three, Toronto number four.
That's another head-scratcher.
Well, it's really interesting because Toronto, I think, is better than, say, the worst fourth worst team in the league.
Sure.
That's a real opportunity for them to get somebody good to build upon a decent roster, not a great roster.
Well, they just this is the reward for Toronto for a really bad season of bad luck. You know, they had to play their games in Tampa because Canada wouldn't allow COVID, because of COVID, for them to play there. They had so many close losses when they started the season. I mean, just really tight games that just did not go their way. And then they ended up with this massive bout of COVID cases with their players and their coaches as they were just starting to get back up to 500. So they've had a terrible string of luck. So this is kind of their little party favor for all that bad luck.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Craig Goldstein. He's the editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. And we'll ask him, well, is Rob Manfred right? Because Manfred says that the new enforcement against the sticky substances, enforcement's going well. Is that really the case?
I think it's entertaining.
When people are dropping their pants. We will ask that question of Craig Goldstein up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss.
And The Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free, or at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store, they'll even bring it out to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line, drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average, is Craig Goldstein. He's the editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. Craig, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
All right, we want to ask you first, let's lead off with the sticky substance question. Rob Manfred said the new enforcement is going pretty well. What's your take on how it's all developing?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's generally pretty guarded. He doesn't give much, and it's easy for him to say that after a day or two of seeing this enforcement. I think it is going fine. We've seen these pitchers get checked as they're exiting the field, or whether it's Brett Anderson leaving the field with an injury, or just someone completing their inning. And what we've seen in the data, what we've analyzed at Baseball Prospectus, is that we've seen a significant drop off in the amount of spin across mm-hmm. the league in terms of RPM on the ball. So I think it is accomplishing what they want to accomplish. I think in terms of how well it's going, there are some quibbles about, how this was implemented, when it was implemented, that kind of thing, given how long it's been a problem. But in if you want to take a narrow view of just whether the rule is working and whether it's really impacting the game on the field, I think that is going pretty well. I think we can go with him on that.
Yeah, Craig, I agree with you. I think that it just having the rule and having the checks is a deterrent right now. And, I know Garrett Cole's really, his spin rate has suffered dramatically, which tells a lot. What do you make of Boston manager Alex Cora's comments that it would be hard for him to ask umps to check pitchers for these substances based on his involvement with the 2017 Astros? I mean, he says he's going to do what he has to do to, do his job as a Red Sox manager, but he's really uncomfortable with the idea of casting stones. Where do you come out on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting comment. I kind of raised my eyebrow there.
Me too.
I think it shows some self-awareness, right? I think we can appreciate that he was caught in mm-hmm. in a scheme that involved breaking the rules. And I think he's, it shows, again, some self-awareness to say, like, look, this has happened to me. I'm not going to be really aggressive about, I was exposed in terms of breaking the rules. I'm not going to be aggressive about trying to expose others. But I don't think that really, if the league is trying to shine a light on this issue and use sunlight as the best disinfectant, I don't know that this is helping them do that. But I think he's trying to kind of straddle the fence on abiding by the rules at this point as the league puts them forth, and also not piss off his other managers and the players throughout the league. So I think he's just trying to play the middle there, and I don't really blame him. But I also I don't know that it's accomplishing very much. And I think, honestly, the rules as they've been implemented with the automatic checks twice on starters throughout the game, once on any other reliever who comes in. And look, we saw the league do this to a knuckleballer who is certainly not trying to put anything on the ball to get more spin. We saw them do it to a position player who was pitching just yesterday. I think the way that the league has gone about it kind of relieves him of any actual duty to do this. But it was an interesting comment, for sure.
We're talking to Craig Goldstein. He's the editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. Okay, we're here in Houston. Astros on an 11-game winning streak, one of the great stories in baseball right now. And they've got a great shortstop, Carlos Correa. He is going to be a free agent. There are all kinds of whispers here. Can the Astros afford him? Will they afford him? When we think about the Astros here, there's this feeling in Houston that the Astros are a small-market team with a small-market budget. And yet they performed at such a high level. What holds the Astros back from spending big time to keep their star shortstop?
Well, I mean, historically, it's just the owner and the budget, right? It's interesting, you know, to hear that Houston views itself, not the club, but the city kind of views itself as a small market. And I certainly understand that why that might be the case. But if you look at actual market size, I think their TV market is the fourth largest in the country. And I know that there have been some RSN issues in the past that have had issues and impact on the budget, quite frankly. But there is no really legitimate reason they shouldn't be able to retain Correa if they want to, or, you know, if they want to replace him with — this is a very talented shortstop class, and quite frankly, Correa, the way he's playing right now and the way he plays when healthy, could place himself atop of it. But, you know, you've got Corey Seager, Trevor Story, among others. Francisco Lindor was part of this incoming class before he signed his extension. There's no reason they shouldn't be able to play with the big boys in terms of budget and retain Correa if they so choose. I think the reason that they haven't done that in the past, the reason they let George Springer, among others, walk, is that they it's just a view of the team. You know, is this the right person? Is this the right player that we want to invest so heavily in? But they could easily, based on their market size, the, you know, how we tend to view actual markets, you know, for across the league, they could absolutely hang with other top tier budgets and extend someone like Correa. I think it will really just come down to whether they view his likelihood of staying healthy and performing at this level to continue, not across the whole contract, right? He's going to be looking for a very long-term contract, but even across their competitive window and the overlap the contract would have with that.
Well, good. That sounds positive, Craig. I'm liking the sound of that. And it looks like Houston made a great decision with George Springer, as he's played in single-digit games this season. So the Astros right now, posting one of the best offensive season literally in Major League Baseball history. They're as good or even better than they were in 17 and in 19. But do you think the majority of people still view this as the Astros are still cheating, or do you think they're able to see, man, they are slugging clean and they're just powered by years of shrewd player acquisition and development? What is the general consensus? What do you think?
From what I see generally, I think there's kind of a caustic eye cast towards the Astros, honestly. I don't think I don't know that there's like a legitimate underlying reason that people would say this, other than it's a way to discredit a team that has generated some ill feelings over the last few years because of the trash can banging scheme, the sign stealing scheme. I don't think that there's a legitimate reason for people to hold that view, honestly. It's just something that, you know, this day and age, if you don't like someone, you have a reason to dismiss them. And this is a raw reason that's present in the past. And we just saw a report that said that they were trying to use some things as late as 2019. Okay, fine. But we're two seasons out from that now. Granted, last year was a short season. There's a new general manager. There's a new manager. You know, there's frankly a lot of different players at this point. There's been a fair amount of turnover. I don't think that there's any reason to actually believe that. I think And we've done research, for what it's worth, at Baseball Prospectus. Rob Arthur published this in the aftermath of this revelation coming out, saying that the sign-stealing scheme kind of helped as much as it hurt them at the time. Because when they were wrong about what pitch was coming, they often missed badly, and that hurt them significantly at the plate. So I don't think that the sign-stealing scheme is the base reason they were really good on offense.
Right,
They've been really good on offense.
That's Craig Goldstein. You can read him at Baseball Prospectus. Really appreciate you joining us, Craig.
Thank you for having me, David and Carla. Have a great day.
You too.
The Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And one of the mysteries to me in this NFL offseason is the story of Deshaun Watson. So Rusty Harden, who is Deshaun Watson's attorney, has said that the NFL has not yet spoken with Deshaun Watson, which just strikes me as very surprising. The NFL has interviewed some of the accusers about what took place, but they've not talked to the man involved. Why would the NFL not at this point, and here we are, essentially at the end of June, why would the NFL not have had this conversation with Deshaun? A couple other milestones on this. The trial is set for after the season.
In 2022.
Next year. So
it's a jury trial.
Yeah, the NFL doesn't get to wait on the trial. The NFL is going to have to render some kind of judgment, make some kind of decision between now and the start of the season, which is really only about 2 months away, 2.5 months away. Why aren't they talking to Deshaun Watson? Why is he left out of this conversation?
There is too much mystery in this situation for me to figure this out. And I think, you know, I've been a big Deshaun Watson fan, and so I have followed this closely. You know, I'm jury's out on what's going on here. I find everything super curious, i.e. the NFL, we haven't heard a word, like not a peep from Deshaun Watson's perspective. There's been talk, there's been said several times in the media here, no settlement talks, like he's not interested, not going to settle. And so now they're going to go for this jury trial. Something is not fitting right here. If you really have 22 women coming at you like this, why would you not settle and move on with this? Something is not being said. And these two lawyers here in Houston, Rusty Harden and Tony Busby, are Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey, and they are eerily quiet.
Yep.
It's very odd. And I think the NFL is making a mistake by not moving on something. I mean, they can put him on the commissioner's exempt list, which he cannot play, but he will be paid, or they can suspend him without pay. Take a stand. Like, I was so impressed and so encouraged this week by the NFL and how they handled Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib coming out as gay, and how the NFL talked about, like, congratulated him. Way to go, Carl. This is where we need to start. And there's been an outpouring of support, and his jersey was the number one seller, which is so exciting. So I'm like, okay, you handled that very tough situation beautifully. Why can't you handle sexual assault, domestic violence, you know, allegations, all of this? Why can't you do better about that? I don't get it. I don't get it. What am I missing?
I really don't know why it's taking so long. I will tell you this. It's taking a long time because it's a complicated situation. There's a lot to unpack there. What I just don't understand is why they're not talking to Deshaun yet. Clearly the best outcome for Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans right now would be if Deshaun would write a big check to settle, the legal issues would go away, and the NFL would render its judgment, whatever that might be, 4-game suspension, 6-game suspension, and then you would know what...
It'll be minimum 6.
Well, okay, let's call it
easy.
6. Then you would know, then the Broncos or whomever, the Eagles, whomever would be making the trade with the Texans would know, okay, I don't have him. I've got to start Drew Locke if I'm the Broncos. I got to start Drew Locke for the first six
games
of the year.
Doesn't that sound exciting?
Yeah. So they, but they at least know what the window is, what the punishment is. But right now, for the Texans and Deshaun, limbo is a dark day. Just nothing taking place, no conversations.
And for the NFL, too. I mean, limbo for the NFL is bad. And do you think this is a situation like a parent, if I don't ask my kid if they're drunk or drinking, then I won't have to know. So maybe the NFL is thinking, if we don't talk to Deshaun, we don't have to hear all these gory details.
Well, they're going to have to deal with it.
They are.
They will be dealing with it. They will make a decision between now and the start of the season. So let's start talking to Deshaun today, not a month from now. Anyway, that's just my take. And obviously several things to unfold there, but it leaves the Texans and other teams and what Deshaun Watson might be able to do hanging out there in limbo. One team that doesn't feel like they are in limbo at all about their quarterback situation are the Rams. I mean, Sean McVay is gushing about Matt Stafford. He loves his new quarterback.
He does love him. I mean, look what he says. Whatever people say about him, as good as it can be, he's even better than advertised. It makes sense to him. The guy's ability to see the game, his ability to draw on his experiences, the feel that he has, it's pretty special and unique. And man, his feel for people, his authentic way of connecting with his teammates, his coaches, this guy, it's great being around him. Like, wow.
And he hasn't even played a game yet for the Rams. Interestingly, people did not gush about him that way in Detroit. What happened here? Do you think, I mean, there's some, to me, Sean McVay is a very confident coach.
And effusive. He
bordering on arrogance. And so there's a little bit of, well, I'm going to take this guy who has struggled to succeed elsewhere, and I'm going to make him a great quarterback. I mean, if, in fact, the Stafford experiment works out really, really well for the Rams, Sean McVay will be able to say, I did this.
He's going to get
a lot of credit for it. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think Sean McVay's exuberance, I think that Matthew Stafford is an accomplished player. I think he was stuck in a purgatory in Detroit. But here's the bottom line. The Rams gave up a lot
for
him.
Yeah. Number ones, I mean, there was they didn't have a number one this year to give up because of the Jalen Ramsey trade, right? But they gave up other big capital.
They got the Rams. Lions got the Rams' 2022 first-round pick, their 2023 first-round pick, and a 2021 third-round pick, and Goff. So, you know what? You better pump up your franchise that you just traded your future for.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it.
He better be exceptional. The Rams are all in for the here and now. I mean, the trade for Jalen Ramsey with the number one pick previously, now all these picks and draft capital for
And it's worked out
Stafford.
For them so far. Well, Jalen Ramsey is fantastic.
Jalen Ramsey is fantastic, but they didn't have a great year. I mean, I wonder, this just isn't the prototype way to build a team, to continually give up number one draft picks to go and acquire talent.
Yeah, because the Texans have done that, and look where it's gotten them.
Well, what
bottom of the basement.
And, of course, what happens when you're trading picks for talent, you're putting stresses on your total salary cap picture because picks are the cheap talent and the players they're acquiring are full max contract type guys. I mean,
but you're also getting proven versus potential.
There's no doubt. So they've got a proven commodity in Jalen Ramsey, but do they have a proven commodity in Matt Stafford? I mean, this is where I really think they're on the edge. I'm not buying that the Rams are a Super Bowl contender right now. I know a lot of people are, but they and the NFC are certainly on a list of teams, maybe the top six teams in the NFC, but do I put them at the top two or three? I'm not sure that I do.
But I will say I agree with you there. I mean, time will tell. I do think Stafford is a huge upgrade from Jared Goff. I have never been a big fan of his, and I think he showed his true colors.
Well, the Lions have come out and said they're not looking at Jared Goff as a placeholder to a future quarterback. They are going to fully invest
in
Jared Goff.
As they should.
What else are they going to say? Frankly, this is who they have. This is the guy they got to ride. There's not anybody else walking in that door right now. So they'll know a whole much more in a year. If the Lions struggle this year and Goff is a failure, the Lions will be hunting for a quarterback in next year's draft. I mean, that will be fine. All right. Other NFL news of interest. Your Raiders shored up their defense. They signed Hayward at corner. He's at 32 years old, he's not at the peak of his career, but he's a guy who has proven he can play well. You like that signing for the Raiders?
I like that signing a lot because you know what happens here? Yes, he is 32 years old. He just signed a one-year deal for $4 million. But what this does, it gives the Raiders much-needed veteran presence at the cornerback position because he's going to join a fifth-round rookie in Nate Hobbs, Damon Arnett in his second year, but he's very injury-prone, Trayvon Mullen from last year. He really gives that veteran support that those young cornerbacks need, and he's reconnecting with his former DC, Gus Bradley, from the Chargers, and his same secondary coach, Ron Miles, who came over with Bradley. So this is a great move by the Raiders. It's not expensive. They're getting experience. They're getting talent. You know, Pro Football Focus has him as one of the top five cornerbacks in the league. So, you know, the bummer for me is that I was kind of hoping for Richard Sherman to make his way to Las Vegas. That's probably not going to happen with the Casey Howard.
Yeah, Sherman's still hanging out there. And presumably he wants to land with a contender. Maybe he's going to wait till somebody has an injury and he can find a spot. There were whispers that he might land in the Cowboys camp. Cowboys have a lot of young corner talent, but Sherman, that veteran presence, and, of course, he had worked with Dan Quinn previously. Yeah, Richard Sherman is one of the biggest names still remaining on this free agent market.
He is, and I think he would be to the Cowboys exactly what Casey Hayward is to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a veteran presence who probably is lacking a little bit on the original speed, but he's got that veteran presence, has worked with the DCs before. I mean, these things are important. So maybe Jerry will pull the trigger on Richard.
All right. Also with the Raiders, Carl Nassib came out this week saying he's now an openly gay player in the NFL.
The first openly active gay player in the NFL.
And that's intriguing because presumably there are others. Just statistically, there are other gay players in the NFL who are choosing not to disclose their identity. Do you think this opens the door then? Will we be hearing of other players shortly?
I do think so. I really do.
Because he got a lot of support, Carl did.
Oh, he got nothing but support, really. And honestly, he should. Because he wasn't announcing it to say, well, here I am. It was, his announcement included a $100,000 donation to the Trevor Project, which is the world's largest suicide prevention and crisis intervention organization for the LGBTQ youth, plus youth. And I think that's so cool because it takes the onus off of him and his sexuality and says, I'm doing this because this is a hard lifestyle and there's a lot of bullying and vitriol and there's a lot of suicide with this kind of situation. And I love that he's matching that together with the announcement. I thought he was really great. And the Shield got this one right. The NFL's response was incredible in saying the NFL family is proud of Carl for courageously sharing his truth today. Representation matters. We share his hope that someday soon statements like his will no longer be newsworthy as we march towards full equality for the LGBTQ community. We wish Carl the best of luck on this coming season, and we're proud of you, Carl. Did that really come from the NFL? That's awesome. I mean, it's amazing. And honestly, I love that Carl is a Raider in this because, you know, for all the vitriol that Al Davis received for all of his power plays for years in the NFL, the guy was woke before woke was a thing. He hired the first black NFL coach in Art Shell, the first Latino head coach in Tom Flores, the first female executive in NFL history in Amy Trask, and now he has the first openly gay active NFL player in Carl Nassib. It's a perfect organization that is ahead of its time, and Al Davis did all that. Why? Because that's what you're supposed to do.
So Al Davis set that table. Mark Davis, of course, the owner now. Yep. And, yeah, I think that team is – John Gruden certainly was very supportive of Carl Nassib's disclosure.
Yep, and I love what Gruden said. He said, what makes a man different is what makes a man great.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. I mean, I just think that it was a huge, huge week for the NFL. The Shield got it right. Impressive.
All right, props to the Raiders, props to the Shield, and to Carl Nassib. When we come back, we will – tidy up the show. We will look at some of the highlights that we've just covered, and we'll revisit whether Carla came in here with spider tack hidden underneath her clothes. All that and more when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss
and The Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
All right, David, I have some questions for you.
No, wait a minute. It's usually the other way around.
I know. Look at me, like, starting a segment.
Trying,
I never do this.
You're trying to deflect from the question I wanted to ask you is, where's the spider tack hidden on your body?
Exactly. I'm going right to Frisco for you, actually.
Okay.
And I started first, so I get to go.
I guess.
So there is no talk out of Frisco, Texas. What is going on with the Cowboys? You're our insider. Let's hear it. What don't we know? What do we need to know?
Well, actually, no news is good news. Because right now, news at this point is usually somebody's mad. Xavier Howard holding out from the Dolphins will not show up. Or Aaron Rodgers is upset. And thankfully, right now, in the world of the Cowboys, there does seem to be some harmony. Everybody's under contract. Everybody seems focused on developing as a team. And you have in that locker room a great leader in Dak Prescott, who by all accounts, the players love and follow. And he's setting a real tone of let's get back to work.
And he looks good, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about Dak Prescott is, of course, a year or two, last couple of years, all the debate was around his contract and all the controversy around his contract. But if you listen to Dak Prescott, he was always very calm about it, very deliberate about it. He always said, I want to finish as a Cowboy. Dak's brother would say, the debate, the problem isn't the money, it's the length of the deal. And so they were debating on the length of the term, and there were lots of variables to settle out. But Dak was always positive about staying with the Cowboys. And Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones were always effusive about wanting to keep Dak Prescott. So in some sense, the big, wide-eyed, crazed, I mean, there were all kinds of accusations. There were accusations that the Cowboys wouldn't sign Dak because they're racist. The Cowboys didn't view Dak as worthy of being the Cowboys quarterback. There were all those things, but that was all from the media. If you actually listen to what the two parties said, it was very, very civil. And right now, that team is working productively. There are no negative...
Built for speed? They're ready to go?
Yeah. Anything could happen tomorrow. There could be a new headline. But it would seem that they have got all their players in. They've signed their guys, and
they got Dan Quinn in, which is
great. Dan Quinn will take over that defense, and they're really banking on him getting that defense organized. Look, the fate of the Cowboys next year is ideally their defense gets to be a middle-of-the-road defense. I don't think you could.
Which is good enough for the NFC least.
Yeah, you could not expect better than middle-of-the-road, yep, given where they were last year. And then the offense could be elite. And an elite offense with a middle-of-the-road defense, and yeah, that could win the NFC East.
All right. Remains to be seen. You heard it here.
There it is. Thanks so much for listening to this. This has been The Boss and the Gloss on Sports Map Radio.
It's 2026, not 2006. Your antivirus shouldn't feel like a dial-up. WebRoot Essentials protects your new and old devices without slowing them down. It scans 6 times faster, uses 33 times less space, and it's ranked #1 against Norton, McAfee, basically all the usual suspects. And right now, you can get an exclusive 60% off when you go to webroot.com/audio. Lock in the smarter, lighter, faster protection your devices deserve and get WebRoot Essentials today. That's webroot.com/audio for 60% off.